This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 615, brought to you by Harry's. To get your free trial set, go to harrys.com/ifanboy right now. That's harrys.com/ifanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you.
I'm so tired.
Hello, welcome to my family. Pick of the Week, episode 615. It's the first show back in 2018. Yay. we're going to explain that in a second. I'm Chronicle Patrick, and I'm here with my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Hi.
And we have a special guest this week. It's Ryan Haupt. He's back.
I'm back.
And normally, you know, we take a couple weeks off at the end of the year, as always, and it's a good time to rejuvenate and recharge the batteries and come back fresh in the beginning of the year, full of excitement and energy. And then Josh and I both got really sick. And I literally today, this morning, flew across the country, escaping that giant storm in the East Coast. I made it out like the last helicopter out of Saigon.
I don't know if it's okay to make that joke anymore.
I'm on 1 hour of sleep. And I'm still sick. So there's your spoiler warning.
Good life choices, Connor.
You know, rejuvenate means to make young again. Are you guys feeling young after your period of rejuvenation?
Normally I do feel younger and full of life after the break, but I'm just so tired from not sleeping and from being sick for a week now. Anyway, Ryan's here. He's younger than us and more excited.
Full he's of been given the instruction that if he starts to hear snoring, to just vamp.
I piss and vinegar.
Which he can vamp, by the way.
And I feel like we just need to clarify, again, this has nothing to do with the comics. I'm just so bone tired right now. This is the way it goes. This is how the podcasting game goes. Sometimes you got to do the show when you've had no sleep and you've been sick for a week. We are a fanboy. Everyone can read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book, call it the pick of the week. We talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick, some listener mail if we have time. We have a fun time. We have fun, as much fun as we can have when we haven't been sleeping for a week, sometimes literally. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be some spoilers. Exercise some caution. This week, Josh had the first pick of 2018.
I did, and the pick of the week is therefore Captain America number 697. This was not an easy pick. It wasn't an obvious one for me. I read a bunch of comics that I liked. I didn't read bad comics, but there wasn't really, you know, the standout, like, wow, that was amazing. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that this was a great issue of Captain America in this in the greater historical sense. However, when I laid everything out side by side, what is it that I like? What is it that I want to be reading? This was the most obvious choice. And I think that what, for me, I'm seeing is, and if you look back at the picks that I've made over the past 6 months or something like that, I feel like there's been a bunch of these where it's just some good craft. It's kind of what I want to see. It's not stupid and overcomplicated, because it's just every page is a joy to look at from the combination of Chris Somney and Matt Wilson. I mean, just 100%. And I absolutely add Matt Wilson into that as a large factor to it. I think his coloring is perfect.
Okay, well, can I just offer one bit of criticism?
Sure.
Of the coloring?
Okay.
And it doesn't detract from the book itself, because it also happened in Black Bolt this week.
Okay.
Where Captain America also appeared. They seem to be coloring his blue more of like an aquamarine.
I feel like that has to do with the lighting or wherever they are, because he's blue in a lot of this.
He's blue in a good portion of it, but there's parts of it where he's like a teal. And the same thing happened in Black Bolt this week.
But he's in like the golden light in those parts.
Maybe.
Like that's like sunset.
It's a minor problem.
Did Kraken dress him? Or Kraven? Kraken the squid.
No, that's Kraven, strike one, Ryan.
Did Kraven like take off his clothes and put on his uniform as part of the preparation?
Let's see.
He's looking good in the bar. I don't know if he needed a
supervillain.
Yes, he did. He did dress
I love
him.
That scene in the bar. That was great.
I like that it was just so fast. I just like there was a lot of that in this. I liked the economy. I like how it started and then it was go. I liked the fact that, you know, he had to rescue the guy and he knew that he had to rescue. And I think Kraven says something like he says, "Who's that?" And Kraven's like, "Doesn't matter."
And then there's a panel where Cap has to, he just gives the side eye and then flings himself out the window. And it's fantastic.
That was
my favorite moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then ruined by whatever cat that was.
What do you mean ruined by whatever cat that was?
That's not a cat that exists in the world.
There is a back issue on the fourth panel on that page with that cat.
Yeah,
that's some sort of genetic monstrosity that's been created in the lab. People will tell me it's a leopard or a jaguar, but it's way too big to be a leopard. The proportions aren't right for it to be a jaguar. I just
Me Kraven's not making his own animals on his weirdo island.
If you look at the trophies on the wall, there are definitely some aliens and monsters and things like that. So it's possible.
This issue a lot is that it's Kraven versus Captain America,
right.
not a pairing you would ever expect to see. And I always love those pairings. Magneto fights Fantastic Four or something like that. That to me is the most fun stuff.
Yeah, and just the way that there's no deep exploration of Kraven. It's just he's Kraven. I'm going to hunt
you. But Kraven really is a villain for our age because he's a rich guy who likes to hunt things that nobody likes.
Yeah,
and that's a thing in pop culture right now.
I also really appreciate the fact that they didn't attempt to like modernize
the costume.
Yep. Yeah, he's just wearing he's wearing those 3/4 animal print yoga pants. So, but that's more like it's more like time caught up to him than the other way around. and he doesn't wear shoes. You know, it just is what it is. It's a chase. You know, it's the hunt. It's the whole thing. It moves. You know, like I didn't have a chance to even notice that big cat was drawn oddly because it just moves. You know,
that's what I love that storytelling beat where Cap reaches for his shield that isn't there. That's a great moment of comic storytelling. Comic in both that it's kind of a funny moment and comics that it is well done in a panel structure.
Yeah. Yep. And then later there's a moment where he has his shield back and I was like, where did that come from? And then I had to go back and realize in the past couple of pages it was very subtly placed. It was on Kraven's back.
Yeah, he's wearing it.
And they didn't really like highlight it. It just appeared at one point.
They do the small cap shield in this book.
Yeah, I like it.
My supposition is that Chris Samnee's writing this.
I agree with you.
I really liked this a lot and it was Pick a Week a couple of issues ago, but this is not the voice that Mark Waid has used in the past for Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little more Dudley Do-Right.
Yeah.
You think they're doing it, is this like a Marvel style or?
Well, Mark Waid's written a lot of Captain America and I've read all of it. And this just didn't, if I had to guess, if I had to put money down, it would be that Mark Waid and Chris Samnee are co-plotting it and Samnee is drawing it and scripting it.
And it's almost more along the lines of like, they're keeping Mark Waid's name on there because they'll do a phone call once a month. And here's what I'm planning to do. Yeah, it sounds good. Maybe try this. All right, good enough. You know, and that's it. I agree with you.
Not necessarily a complaint, but it's just the voice is different enough.
Which is, I think that's what happened on Black Widow, too.
Yes. I think that's what they're doing now.
Yep. And then Cap ends up back in ice, so it's it's classic superhero comic book. There's not too much to it. There's a lot of craft, and it's not trying to be too heavy. It just looks cool and is fun, and at this point right now, that was 100% what I wanted to read more than anything else. And you're going to hear that from me more and more often, is my guess. As everything
Ryan?
Gets stupid and doesn't matter.
Now you mentioned the beat where he reaches for the shield. I didn't know what the hell was going on in those two panels, and now I do.
Yeah, it took me a second as well. It's not, but I just thought it was a great moment once you see the progression of his thinking. Like, I think the way Chris Omni does action sequences, you get a clear picture into the head of the person who's performing the action, and I enjoy that when it works.
Mm-hmm. I thought he was taking a quick break for Tai Chi.
You thought he was taking a defensive stance against those rocks?
Yeah. Because I remember reading this, and again, been real sick, been real tired, and going, what is he doing? I don't understand this at all. Oh, well, and just going on, moving on. Again, this is all user error, all of these complaints.
What did you guys think of the one-page Lenel Francis Yu stinger, like the little post-credits sequence that we're getting now in comics, apparently?
I kind of noticed that that is a thing that's been happening, but that I don't really care because I think of it like an ad.
Well, it's kind of like the, first of all, it's the it's the movie thing. Mm. If you look at the cover, it's a very dumb and awkwardly placed "Where's Wolverine?" button.
Was I supposed to be wondering where Wolverine was in a Captain America book?
Well, just in general, I believe in that issue we had where it was a Marvel Legacy or whatever, it was, that updated everything. He the body was no longer encased in
it. Oh, okay. See, this is what happens when you don't read comics news anymore, is
yep.
You don't know when stuff like this is happening.
I don't read the news. I just read that issue.
I read that issue, too, but I didn't put it together.
Yeah, I didn't read it.
Anyway,
it
was worth it. It was fine. But I'm glad you picked it, Josh, because I remember in the last issue with Batroc?
Mm-hmm.
Who was in?
I don't know.
You weren't like quite that. Sure, because you weren't necessarily down with these one shot issues. But
I'm down with it right now. It's what I wanted. Well, as we get into some of this, there's a couple of DC ones where I was like, oh come on, that's enough of that. So this was sort of a tonic to that, I think.
I also really like the little not a letters column, but. Why do you love Captain America?
Uh-huh.
Those were nice.
I'm looking over the first couple of pages again and liking them more and more, too, because the woman that he's playing pool against actually has, like, a leopard print collar on her jacket.
We should have guessed.
Should've never, known. Yeah, never trust a woman in leopard print.
Yeah.
I just figured he was going to have some sort of Bob Seger moment on the road, He's had a long road trip. He needs some...
And also in the foreground... In the foreground is a dartboard with all the darts in the bullseye and a few around it. So I'm guessing they just finished playing darts, which is a hilarious touch.
Bob Seger, kids, was a musician in the 70s and 80s.
Here I go. On the road
Exit
again.
Stage left, the Snagglepuss Chronicles, number one.
Even.
From Mark Russell, who wrote the
first. Oh, I was wondering who was going to be the first to do an impression. I should have known it was Josh.
That wasn't a tough call.
No, it wasn't.
And on art, Paul Mounts colors. This is highly anticipated. The Hanna-Barbera books have been hit and miss, but the hits have been really strong hits.
Yeah.
And this was pitched as Snagglepuss as Tennessee Williams.
Yeah. And the problem with that for me is that, like, I feel like a lot of this went over my head. And I'm not an unintelligent or unread person.
Uh-huh.
And I was a little like, oh, this is advanced lit, and I didn't take that class.
It was very subtle, whereas Flintstones was very overt social satire that we could all relate to.
I mean, I could relate with generally what was happening here. I get the themes of America, but I feel like there were definitely things that passed me by, and I was more along the lines of, wow, I think that's really probably pretty well done, but more in an academic sense.
I didn't love this.
Yeah, that's basically what I'm getting at. I'm saying, oh, this is good. I'm not really enjoying it, like, as much as I would like to. But given the subject and the pitch, basically, like, I wasn't going to love this. You know what I mean?
Not a big Snagglepuss guy?
I just, like, I get it. It's just not a thing that I know a ton about, like, Tennessee Williams and... I get it. He's a playwright, and he's the toast of the town. He's from the South, but he's gay, and that's a secret. And, I get all that. Yep, and it was really well done, and it was fine. But, like, I don't know.
Ryan, did you read it?
Yeah, I did. No problem with the Cat Anatomy here. That was fine. Just going to go ahead and throw that out there. Just make sure. Cut off
Thank
the comments
God.
Ahead of time. Yeah, this felt like a really intelligent episode of BoJack Horseman. I don't know if either of you watched that show.
No. I tried to watch one once.
I kind of
we just made a Bob Seger reference, Ryan. So keep that in your calibrator.
It's got Gob Bluth in it.
He's never done anything funny outside of Arrested Development. That's what
Josh loves. Gob Bluth.
Just in Arrested Development.
Right up there.
Yeah, he was
just doing Joe Bluth again. But anyway, continue. This is not an Arrested Development podcast.
The point is, I didn't love the first couple of seasons of BoJack, but this most recent season was actually, I thought, some very high level stuff. And
that's one of those things that people tell me. I'm like, I didn't really like it. They're like, oh, it doesn't get good for two seasons. Then how the fuck would I ever know? Because I'm not going to sit
through the background.
I have shit to do.
So do I.
So no, weird? Is it weird that so we get to see Snagglepuss's play on its last night, which I really liked that sequence.
Mm-hmm. That was a fun sequence.
And in that play, it's a bunch of dogs. Well, I like that they were humans with dog masks, and then there was like a lion's dog mask or whatever they were.
Yeah, she's a lion. I guess you're right.
But in the play, they're all wearing clothes. And then later on, when we see like Snagglepuss out in the town, he just wears a shirt.
Several of them do.
I don't know why, but it weirded me out.
Because dogs wear clothes?
Yeah, but nobody wears pants.
Right.
But all the animals.
The play they're all wearing.
Yeah, but he's a dog.
I absolutely understand the point you're making, Connor.
I don't know if I'm making sense. I'm really tired.
What he's saying is that, well, okay, so there's two human characters both playing dogs, and then there's a mountain lion character playing a dog, and she's wearing a dress, and the two human characters who are playing dogs are wearing pants, even though in this world, actual humanoid dogs don't wear pants. They just wear top clothes.
They should be wearing, like, fake dog legs.
Which you'll note, if you notice, if you refer back to the cover of the issue, it is made unclear whether or not genitalia is exposed because it is tastefully covered up by a camera.
Well, in the later shots where they're shown in the cartoon style of only having a jacket and no pants on, that's how Huckleberry Hound and Snagglepuss are traditionally shown in the cartoons. That's when they cut to them having no pants at like this cotillion, which is not the actual term.
Yeah, I went to cotillion growing up.
It's jarring. Also, the fact
weird.
That they're standing up on their like their paws or I don't know. Ryan, you probably know.
Their toes.
The term you're looking for is called digitigrade.
There you go. I've definitely never heard that term.
Don't encourage this.
But without having the front paws to lean on, it looks really strange. Like I feel like they should have just not done that.
Whereas we humans are plantigrade.
I don't know that Picky Guggenheim allows this kind of behavior. Put some pants on.
Mm-hmm. It's a different world. So basically, I don't know that I get it yet. I can see that it's really good.
Sticking with it?
Yeah, I am going to read it because Mark Russell won a lot of favor.
And it's, I mean, it is interesting, you know, you're dealing, as we said, you're dealing a lot with the underground gay community in New York and the art scene in the 50s. You've got the communist Red Scare. You've got the Rosenbergs. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things happening here. I just need to connect to it more.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, the gay club he goes to is the Stonewall, which was where there was a riot. Yeah,
I get what you're saying, Josh. Like in the party scene, there's the two guys in the foreground talking about the new magazine, The Partisan. I feel like I should know what that means.
Yeah. So it made me feel kind of dumb. And I don't like that.
I don't like being dumb.
I don't. That's true.
I guess I just wasn't paying attention, but I wasn't ready for Batman and Catwoman and Superman and Lois Lane's fun night of frivolity to be over.
Oh, you thought that this would be a continuation of that?
Yes. Batman 38.
I read one into the other one, too, and I could see why you would hope for that. And I don't mean that to say that this was a bad issue. I actually momentarily considered this to be Pick of the Week because I thought it was really well done and also in that same way unexpected.
Yes.
I was like, oh, we're back. Right, it's Batman. I forgot. We can't just be always on date night. That makes sense.
So this, now putting that complaint aside, I thought this was a really terrific one-shot introduction of a possible new villain in a really creepy way. I thought this was a really, we talk about Tom King's construction and his structure a lot. He's really good at these one-shot stories.
Yeah, and I think
they don't feel short.
And there was, yeah, they definitely don't, and there were a lot of zigzags in here, basically. Zigzags.
This is Zazz.
I feel bad about that right now. Like, you just like, oh, it's a Mr. Zazz story. Oh, it's not that. You know, it's this. Nope, it's not that. It went from being what would seem quite cliche to being another thing that's quite disturbing, really. And it's after that boomerang of we've just spent this time hanging out with Lois and Catwoman and Clark and Bruce. And just think, oh, you know what? Everything's probably going to just be fine. No.
Everything's delightful.
Everything is not delightful. This whole thing is problematic. And that's what Tom King in one issue reminded us of. You know, that kid's messed up.
Two things I really liked about this issue, I guess it's pretty much the same thing, is that so there's this kid who grew up, I guess, as a friend of the Waynes. He's still a little kid. Mm-hmm. And his parents have been murdered, so he's going to Bruce for counsel. Meanwhile, there's all these stabbing deaths showing up that he assumes Mr. Zazz is responsible for. And occasionally we go back to his life at the manor. He's, you know, in bed with Catwoman, actually sleeping. And then they're having dinner. And both times he's completely preoccupied by the case. And I really like that aspect of it, that mm-hmm. his brain is always churning in the background. And I really love the moment during the dinner when he realizes what's actually happening. And it's Catwoman and Alfred might as well not even be in the room. I really liked that aspect of his personality. Yeah, that was fun for me.
It was just a good one shot.
Yeah,
I also liked the sequence with the letter where we actually get to see Batman being a detective. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we often don't. We know that Batman's smart, and we know that he's always ready for any situation. You know, he's very prepared. But I feel like we don't often get to see him actually decode a puzzle enough right. anymore. For me, and especially, you know, like I was raised going to church, and so like I'm reading this and there's some biblical references and I'm like, those don't sound right. And then, you know, Alfred's like, is that in the Bible? And Batman's, no, it's not Alfred. And so I liked that I was experienced enough, I'm not gonna say smart enough, I just had a different experience to actually pick up on some of the clues that Batman himself picks up on.
You were reading along with the book.
Yeah, Ned, not a book in the Bible. I thought they were referring to the type of translation that it might have been, like the New English Edition or something.
You don't know the Book of Ned?
The Book of Ned, Spider-Man's best friend.
I think it actually says a little something about the writer in that the clues in the story were really obvious clues and they were like so obvious that it was wrong. And I think that it'd be pretty easy to get yourself into a trap where you're trying to write a Batman mystery and then go, no, these clues are all, this is stupid. This has been done, you know, 60 years ago, you know, and right. so you take that. Inadequacy is not the word, but you take that insecurity about it, you know, if you're trying to write a mystery for Batman and you turn it on its head. And I think that that's really deftly done.
He's good at it.
Yeah. Also, this I don't know who Travis Moore is, but I thought it was pretty good art.
Isn't that the guy who did the Luther's, the invincible Luther Strange? No, Luther Strange was the guy who ran for Congress. What book am I thinking of? Where the guy reads the muscle-bound man.
Luther Strode?
Luther Strode. Didn't he do Luther Strode?
Maybe. I think Tradmore did the first one. Tradmore. Not Tradmore. Yeah, no, that's Tradmore, who's a different style altogether.
Yeah, you're right.
Yep, nope.
Batman White Knight number 4, Sean Murphy's Elseworlds Batman story, not called Elseworlds. I like it.
What?
But I feel like we're in that middle zone where I'm ready for things to happen.
A lot of word balloons.
Yeah.
For a while. This seems to be a thing in this book. It's like, I got to get a lot of explanation out of the way in the first 5 or 6 pages, and then I'm going to show you a lot of things, but that's all right.
Unfortunate appearance by Charlie Rose again.
Ugh. Yeah. I like this a lot.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, am I liking this more than you guys?
I really like it. It's issue 4 of 6, so we're kind of in, you know, we're waiting to get to the climax for me.
It's 4 of 8, actually.
Oh, well, that's even...
Yeah, so you got even further to go.
You're in the valley.
Actually, that makes sense. It feels like we're in the middle of the story. Continue.
Yeah, it does. I agree. I could just drink in his art for days.
Sure.
Personally. You know, I really, really like Sean Murphy's line work. He's got... Matt Hollinsworth is just killing it on colors. Yeah, that page with the... The Joker or Jack Napier in... No, well, he does great cars, but...
The garage showed up, and I was like, there it is. There he goes.
Where Jack and Harley are going out for the night, and there's that like, one page of their date night, and he's in the tux, and she's in that dress, and it's just... Oh, that was a good page.
Yep.
He lays a page out really well.
He does, and there's no doubt that it's him at any point. You know, it's just... This is pure Sean Murphy. This is what Sean Murphy does. If you like what Sean Murphy does, this is what you're going to get.
I do like what Sean Murphy does. Yeah. I love the subtle redesigns of all of the character mm-hmm. and their costumes. I think, you know, Nightwing with a small jacket. Didn't think I would like that. Love it. It's great. Batman with a collar. It just makes him evil. You know Batman's a bad guy if he's got a collar on.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Gotham by Gaslight.
Well, I haven't seen it yet. The movie's coming out. It's a...
You've never read it?
Whoa.
I have not actually read it. I should. It's on my reading list to watch before or to read before we watch and do Gotham by Gaslight for the Animation Brain Trust.
You should read it. It's short. It's like 40 pages.
Yeah, and it's Mignola, so it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
You know what my favorite part of this was? He is talking to Gordon about his plan, the GTO, which is such a not subtle car reference, and he's trying to tell Gordon that they'll get Batgirl to go along with it, because they will, and then they said, well, Nightwing's not going to go along with it, and he's like, yeah, he will, because Batgirl did, and I was just like, that was really, it was a very quick bit of psychology that I thought was really well done, and then to have it sort of, I mean, obviously, he has the choice to make it play out, but it just sort of worked exactly. I just thought it was very elegant, I thought it was very nice.
And he's not wrong.
Well, it starts to make you believe, you know, maybe the Joker is going to be okay. And obviously,
wait,
you know,
think this is going to take a turn?
Yeah, I know, exactly.
I don't. I think everything is going to go according to plan.
Everything will be just fine.
I think elegant is a good way to describe the book.
Yeah, it really is.
And they brought Nazis into it.
There's a bit where there's the flashback for Second Harley. It tells the story of how, like, he never does anything to her and he bandages her wounds. And basically the Joker makes this, like, face, like a Hugh Grant smile, and he puts his hands up like, ugh. And like, they make the Joker, who is the Joker at this point? He's not Jack Napier. They make him, like, a romantic comedy charming man. And I was like, jeez. And it works. Like, they sold it.
It's a choice.
Yeah.
And she even says, like, I know I've got Stockholm Syndrome. I just don't care.
Yep.
And of course the Freeze family were Nazis. Of course they were.
If this now flashes back into the 1940s Gotham with, you know, the Bund and Nazis and the Freeze family, that'd be all right.
Yeah. What if you got an entire issue of the old-timey Batmobile that you love drawn by Sean Murphy?
That'd be terrific. But there was no Batman back then, so. Ryan, a bunch of Marvel books ended this week, right? I know Guardians of the Galaxy did.
Was that the last issue?
Yes.
Oh, weird. I did read it. I didn't realize it was the last issue. That's odd.
Yep.
For me. I think Iceman's got a few issues left. I think Iceman ends.
They announced Iceman as it was ending over the break.
Exactly.
Like 12.
Right. So this is Iceman issue 9, part 1 of a new story arc called The Apocalypse Seed. It's the return of Dokken, Wolverine's son, who they've done kind of a fun thing with. And I am really enjoying this book. You know, I read it first and foremost because Cena and I are friends. We actually went to college together and then got to know each other over comics sort of after we both graduated and he was becoming a creator. And so I don't know if it's me and my personal relationship with him, but this book feels strongly personal. Feels like there's a lot of Cena in this book. And maybe I would pick up on that if I was like close friends with any other comics creators, or Cena actually is just putting a lot of himself in this book, you know, and it's obviously the story of Bobby coming out publicly, older Bobby coming out publicly, and he's decided he's now going to move to L.A., and they have kind of a going away party for him at the X Mansion that Dokken and a new young mutant he's recruited that has the ability to turn up or turn down other mutants' powers show up to kind of wreck the party.
They'll do that. And so you've been reading this all along?
Yeah, I had to get caught up with a few issues because I wanted to make sure I was ready to talk about it on the show. But it is a book I've been keeping up with and enjoying.
This is one of those ones that, like, I kind of wish that I'd been reading, but everything about it, other than the fact that I also know Cena, is I don't want to read it.
I wish they were giving him more consistent artists to work with.
I'm noticing that as I go through.
A couple times, and Cena is a writer artist in his own right. Most of the stuff that I've read of his, he has also drawn himself, mm-hmm. And so I don't know that he would necessarily even be the right choice for this book. But I know he has an artist's eye and an mm-hmm. eye for art, and so I just want him to be well served.
Yeah,
is what I'll say. And yeah, I mean, I felt that Bobby coming out was, I don't know if it was a bombshell in the community or not, but I wanted the story told with a little more depth and nuance, and Cena is definitely the guy to do that. And so I'm enjoying his take on this mm-hmm. particular iteration of Bobby Drake.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
A lot of sexy Dokken.
Was he always like pale undead?
I don't think he was always that sexy. I think you put Chris Anka on covers and suddenly everyone's sexy.
Dokken's not a draw.
No. No, he's well, they're doing something with Apocalypse Seeds, which is not something I understand that much. But you know, it's also interesting that, like, Iceman, you know, after Jean Grey, probably the second most powerful mutant on that original X-Men team.
That's a good point.
Underutilized.
Absolutely.
And then you could say they were fixing that, except we now know this book is canceled. So So I'm digging this. And, you know, it's interesting because I read Ultimate X-Men longer than probably anyone should have. And Colossus came out as gay in that series. So, like, they've been toying around with the idea of taking characters you thought were straight for all of X-Men history and re-envisioning them for a more modern metaphor on what it might mean to be a mutant in society. Yeah. And, yeah, keep on keeping on.
Guys, it's a new year. And one thing a lot of people do with the new year is they make New Year's resolutions. I'm sure you have them. Josh's is to not die.
It's literally what I was going to say if you had asked me.
And so how does Harry's tie into the New Year's resolution? Well, you can be smarter with your personal finances. Harry's can save you about $100 a year if you're a frequent shaver. You can take better physical care of yourself. Harry's products have won countless grooming awards, and they'll keep you looking and feeling great. Money and physical shape is probably the two biggest.
What about be pretty?
New Year's resolutions. Well, that's part of taking care of yourself physically.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Be handsome.
Pretty. Yeah. Well, I don't need help anyway.
And
you just need validation.
That's right. Exactly. You understood me too.
I love my Harry's. I was just gone on for 2 weeks for the holidays, and I had all my Harry's stuff with me. I had my face cream. I had my shaving. My little box of blades.
Your travel I had cover. My
no. I was, in fact, misled to believe that the travel cover had been found. Uh-oh. I believe the travel cover has been lost into the ether.
I'm sorry.
So, it's a bummer. It's a bummer. Now I just have to travel with the box of blades, and just that's the whole thing. But that's my problem. Let's not get into it here. Why Harry's? Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, which is why over 3 million guys have switched to Harry's. Jeff and Andy, just two ordinary jamokes who were fed up with getting charged an arm and a leg, razor blades, started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's stripped out necessary features like vibrating handles. Who needs a vibrating handle when you're dealing with your face?
It sounds antithetical.
Seems dangerous.
That's what I'm getting at.
Heating blades, 15 lubricating strips, etc. You don't need that stuff. It just drives up cost, which the razor companies pass on to you, the consumer. A good shave comes down to good blades. That's the only thing that matters. Harry's owns the factory. They're able to deliver amazing blades for just $2 a blade compared to $4 or more you'll pay at the drugstore. And all the products are backed by 100% quality guarantee. So got a special offer for our listeners. Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades. They'll give you their trial shave set for free. You can sign up at harrys.com/ifanboy. All you got to do is pay for shipping. I mean, it's nothing. Claim your free trial offer from Harry's today. It's a $13 value for free. You can sign up. Just cover the shipping. And that trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover, which
yep.
I would advise you not to lose. Just that's my own personal thing. I'll get over it. So to get your free trial set, go to harrys.com/ifanboy right now. That's harrys.com/ifanboy. You can't beat it, especially the new year. Treat yourself. Treat yourself.
Treat yourself. Let us travel now with Black Bolt number 9 to the funeral of Absorbing Man.
When you say it, it's funny, but it's a touching issue.
It is, but also it's extremely weird, which is the reason it's actually on this list. The whole time I was reading it, like it had a lot of the tropes that you'd kind of expect, but it was just a little askew. So, like, they showed up to tell Titania, you know, then there's the fight, but then it's not a real fight because there's that weird little girl character who can communicate with everybody. And then, you know, there's the bar owner in the Bronx who's like, not Carl, he's the greatest guy. And there's this tightrope of taking this guy who's been a villain for a really long time and finding a way to sort of eulogize him. And then Captain America shows up and thinks there's going to be a fight. And then he's like,
I heard there was a supervillain meeting.
Right. And it's just like, he's just sort of awkward and lame. And then Odinson shows up. But the supervillains are also there. And they're like, this is kind of weird. Then there's another big fight. Like, there's a lot that happened in this. And it was just all a little bit weird, which is what I want out of this book.
Well, the thing that happened at the end was the new Inhumans, the ones I don't care are like, showed up. And then now, again, this seems to be where the story is going, and I just don't.
But
I like this issue.
Of course it's going to.
I know, but I don't. I like this issue. Mm-hmm. I like the weirdness. I like Black Bolt hanging out with the Wrecking Crew and then awkward Captain America, even though I thought he was certainly slightly out of character, but whatever. That was fun. These new guys I don't care about.
No, I get that, and I'm totally fine with that part, but I liked the rest of it outside. I knew you were going to say that. I didn't even have to tell me. But it was still kind of weird and funny, and I just – the redemption of Absorbing Man. But without going against who Absorbing Man really is, miraculously at the same time continues. So I like that.
For some reason, I thought this was the end of Rock Candy Mountain as opposed to next issue.
Yeah, next
Rock
time.
Rock Candy Mountain 7, so I was reading it thinking this is it, and then it kept not ending, and I was like, well, this is weird. And then the issue ended, and I was like, well, that's a weird way to end the series. And then I turned the page and it said, you know, final issue next time. I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
That's a lot better. Yeah, I just wanted to check in with the fun of the hobos and I don't remember, Slim, the guy shows up and he's like, sure, I'll go with you. It's a bad choice. It hasn't worked out for you at all, but this guy is so charming that he decides to go with him anyway. And there's a big hobo fight.
This is a book I never would have read if you guys hadn't turned me on to it, and I'm so glad you did. The panel where the guy gets punched and the sound effect is just nope. That would have been a panel of the week if that feature was still running on the website.
It's got great comic timing, this book.
Yes, it does.
Kyle Starks, who writes and draws it, is really good at pacing his jokes out.
I'll tell you one thing I miss about it, and I almost never say this about a book, even ones Ed Brubaker does. I miss the essay at the back.
Uh-huh.
The first couple of issues had a little essay about hobo culture or, you know, apocalyptic Christian mythology or something cool like that, you know, Spear of Destiny stuff. And I always learned something neat, and they were short enough that they didn't take as much time to read as the issue. Ed Brubaker. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I'm literally reading the hobo fight again. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Superman 38 is part 4 of Super Sons of Tomorrow.
Are you not reading this, Connor?
Well, I'm reading this series. I'm not reading this crossover.
Okay. I went ahead. It was the crossover Super Sons of Tomorrow started in this issue an issue ago, or in this
right.
book
I read
an
that.
Issue ago.
I read part 1 and part 4.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and read the two in-between issues just
so
I thought, what the hell?
So I guess in the intervening issues, Tim Drake of old DCU has become a villain named Savior.
Yes, and that is stupid.
What did Tim Drake do to DC Comics?
I don't know.
I just have to say that whenever that appeared in the other issue, I think that was in an issue from last week.
Yes.
And I was and I said, fuck this. And then so I started this, and I remembered, I was like, part 4, and I read that first page with all the fish, and then I saw the next page, and I went, nope, and I deleted the issue. I was like, I'm out. So go on.
It's in the short section. I don't have much to say other than in a previous issue, he says, call me Savior, and nobody does. They all just call him Tim Drake because they all know who he is, and that's dumb. I liked this crossover when it started in this book, Superman, an issue ago. I am liking it less and less with each issue, and basically I only enjoy it when the Titans from the alternate future Geoff Johns Teen Titans run, so Cassie Sandsmark as Wonder Woman, Connor Kent as Superman, and Bart Allen as The Flash are chasing after their friend Tim, trying to figure out what's going on. That's my favorite part of this book.
Well, here's my question. These guys are from
timeline that doesn't exist anymore.
The previous timeline, correct? So, I mean, maybe this happened in the previous issues, but maybe you can tell me. How does Connor Kent know who Jonathan is?
They haven't explained it at all.
Because at one point he's like, Jonathan, no. And I was like, but Jonathan doesn't exist in your world.
Yep.
There's no Jonathan.
Zero explanation of that whatsoever, unless I missed it. But I think we've established I'm a pretty careful
reader. And also, they got to figure out their Damian portrayal, because in the Batman books, he's drawn to be almost 16 years old.
In this book, he's a little baby.
In this book, he's about 2 feet tall. I mean, obviously, the easiest solution is just to kill him. I mean, that's obviously the easiest way to clean this up. But in the other books I've been reading where he's in it, they've been trying to age him up, it seems. And here I open it up and he looks like he's up, comes up to Superman's waist. And I was like, wait a minute. Is it a flashback? Nope. He's a 10-year-old in this issue. So they got to figure that out, amongst other things.
All right, Rogan Gambit, what do you got? I put this on here because I was like, people who like Ron probably want to hear this every once in a while.
Yeah, you know, I'll go ahead and admit it. Sometimes I go out of my way to read an X title if I'm going to be on the show. I'll say that.
All right.
Again, Chris Anka cover. That's always going to be a draw for me. This falls into what I feel is a very specific but often seen trope in fiction, where a formerly involved romantic couple who are no longer together have to go on a mission where they have to pretend to be together again, and there's a lot of sexual tension and chemistry, and that is a trope that works for me, and so that's what this book is, and I dug it.
I really like that there is this cliche that happens and blah, 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 and I like the cliche.
Am I wrong, though? That is a cliche, right?
No, I like
it. Totally. Yeah, you're fine.
I assume this is a miniseries.
I assume so too. And it's got kind of a Black Mirror-y premise where like there's some island where people are going for like couples counseling, but then they disappear and those people seem to be mutants. And so like Rogue and Gambit have to go to this island, this sexy, sexy island, and all sexy with each other. And then
this is a much better looking book than I would have thought they would have given an artist on a book of this level.
Yeah.
Perry Perez, a name I do recognize. It's a really well-drawn book. It's very nice.
I actually had a lot of fun with this. It was a very easy, fun, tantalizing read. So cool. I'm going to check it out for the next issue.
Is there a scene where they have to work through their couples issues undercover, like with a counselor?
They talk about doing it, but then when they go to counseling, the next page is they say basically, well, what if we just go to the counseling and try to actually work through our issues and take it seriously? And then the next page is them strapped down to tables in some sort of medical.
Oh, that's the whole fun of the cliches. Is to make them work out their issues and realize maybe they still love each other.
You know, Connor, somehow I think that's still going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I can see that no matter what the year, no matter who the hosts, I can't get out of this goddamn corner.
Star Wars Corner, that's right. Star Wars number 41. Literally the only reason it's here is because I wanted Connor to feel like that. So let us go to the crumbling planet.
Can I just say something?
Yes.
We got an email over the break where someone had a Star Wars question, and they were like, I'm sorry to do this to Connor. It's like, I don't dislike talking about Star Wars. I love talking about Star Wars.
I don't know. I listened to your Last Jedi podcast. It doesn't seem like you like talking about Star Wars.
That's a different...
We're going to move forward because we're running low on time.
I like talking about Star Wars.
Let's go to the crumbling planet of Jeddah, which is the one from Rogue One. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
See, I don't even know.
Did it get
that.
Destroyed?
The cool premise of this story is that, yes, it got destroyed, so it's like a part of the planet, but there's still people living on it because it hasn't like exploded or anything, and so it's falling apart and it's incredibly unstable. This is like later in the film of 2012, maybe. You know, if you were living on Jeddah at the time, and there's, you know, flames and lava everywhere.
I'm starting to see why this might appeal to you, Josh.
But the Empire is actually still trying to strip mine it. There's a small holdout of sort of Jeddah folk who are like, we're not leaving, this is our home, and they're fighting back, even though it's a hopeless thing. That's basically what's going on here. It's actually pretty cool. I mean, it's Kieran Gillen who has a very...
Oh, I had a different feeling.
Go ahead.
I'm giving this one more issue. This is on its last legs with me.
A series? Like, you're just going to...
Yeah.
Because this story will be
this arc.
Over. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on part...
This arc is not working for me. I often don't know what's going on. Luke is fighting Jackie Chan at points, which is an issue I have with photo referencing, because if you recognize who they reference, it's weird.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have to... It's Salvador La Roca, so I don't even... Like, as long as I can read it, I'm fine. I'm
having a really hard time following what the actual story beats are in this.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell if that's Kieran or if that's Salvador or where that's coming from, but it's... I'm barely holding on to it, and I give this one more issue before I decide whether or not I'm going to bail.
Huh. I can totally understand that, and I can see it, but I'm kind of... I don't know. Like, I guess that Kieran really won me over between the Darth Vader and the Dr. Aphra book, so I'm sort of giving him a longer leash, I suppose.
Hey, man, I'm here for Vader Down, but I ain't seeing no Vader Down here.
That was a while ago. Like, Aphra's where it's at now.
Aphra's good. I'm reading Aphra. Yeah. I'm sticking with that one. But the main Star Wars title is
this isn't as bad as the Yoda in the mountain giant thing. That was horrendous.
True.
And I really liked Jason Aaron's work. So you know, I see what you're saying. I'm fine with it. It's okay. I'm ready for this part to be over. But I think it's interesting, the idea that it's like this crumbling, dying planet, and Luke was trying to find something out about the Jedi, and it was this strange black lesson at the end. But everybody died, so it was fine. All these people are going to die. It's just like Rogue One. It's fine.
So let's get out of this corner.
Okay.
Slide over to the patron pick corner. Every week at patreon.com/ifanboy, the patrons, every patron, no matter what level you're a patron at, can vote on a book to add to the show. This week, we had two books that dominated the competition. One was the Snagglepuss book, which came in second, to X-Men Grand Design number 2 by Ed Piskor. And these two books... I mean, nothing else was even close. It was a domination.
Did either of you read issue 1?
Yes, yeah. I did.
Okay.
I liked issue 1 more, but it doesn't matter. This is his... you tell me, Josh. I didn't read hip-hop, the history of hip-hop, but...
It's a lot. Basically the same idea, but in the X-Men.
It's the history of X-Men. And here we get through where they get the new costume. This is like a book made for Ron. In fact, I saw Ron recently, and he was raving about it.
Reading this, I had a flashback to being in my kitchen in Astoria, shooting that segment of him for the video show where he would just explain all of the things. And I literally thought he was making it up. And he's not, because there's...
If you haven't read this book, this is a miniseries. It's going to continue on later in the year. Literally just telling the history of the X-Men.
It's good, because I can't do this every 2 weeks.
No. They're jumping to the end of the year for the next issue. I'm sure it's taking a long time to do all this reading.
Yeah.
It's a straightforward history of the X-Men as told by the Watcher. Is that what the conceit is?
More or less, yeah.
The Recorder.
And so the first issue was a lot of the Stan Lee Kirby era, blue and yellow costumes, Magneto kind of thing. This is where things started getting loopy. And you had a lot of real goofy villains they fought. And I actually really liked it for that.
I did too. I liked that part a lot.
I mean, this is the X-Men. This is who they are. They're fighting, you know, Lorelei and Unus the Untouchable or whatever his name is, which was a terrific patron power, which I was upset they already have. Mm-hmm. But this was like your goofy Savage Land. When this is where they find the Savage Land. They introduce Polaris, you know, people like the Blob and Toad, and where the X-Men move on from their old costumes, and you have a really racist Nick Fury.
Against mutants.
Yeah. Mutist.
Species? Still racism. I just wanted to point out that it's fictional.
I think this is terrific.
There's a page where he does an entire Little Nemo in Slumberland. I don't know how familiar you guys are with that as an old, you know, turn of the century comic strip where it's always like a dream sequence of Little Nemo. And he does it. He does like it's the numbered panels. It's the rounded panels. The font is mimicking it. And it is a dream sequence of Jean Grey having a dream. And I'm just like, man, if we're going to get Little Nemo and Slumberland homages in an X-Men comic where we're also codifying and synthesizing all of the retcons that have come before into a cohesive thing, like, that's great. That is the Lord's work, and it is being done very well, and I'm for it.
Josh, what are your overall thoughts?
I enjoyed it. I was a little bit lost, but I figure, in order to do this correctly, I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's the best explanation I've ever gotten of it after that thing with Ron. And I was like, well, I wasn't wrong. None of this does make sense. I should be fine with that. And I love the idea that there are people who actually know this and understand it. And I love the idea that there's somebody out there reading this that's going, I know all this. Why am I bothering reading this? I love that. But, you know, I love Ed Piskor's work. I love the way that he sort of makes the other styles into his own. And, you know, they found this guy who did this other thing. And then now this is the thing they were asking him to do it for them. And, you know, he can. You know, and he does everything. He does art, color, production, lettering, the whole thing. You know, I only had to write one credit on the script for this.
Would you guys want this for any other group or character or team besides the X-Men?
I don't know that there's any other team.
I would read an Avengers one in a second.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah.
You want to see Ed Piskor's take on Triathlete or Triathlon?
All of it. I want it from the 60s on.
I think this works particularly well because the X-Men are so strange. It's so melodramatic. It's a soap opera. All comics are soap operas, but this is such a soap opera. And so in that sense, this kind of thing works. Yeah, I mean, you could do this with the Avengers. You could do it with Justice League. Sure, if you want to do them, great. This is something that Marvel does on occasion, something that DC would never do, this kind of project.
Yeah. I'd love to see him do it for all of these things. I don't. Like, if he stops here, that's totally fine. But if he was going to do something, like, I like the Avengers more, so I would want to see that. But don't make this the only thing he does. He's too good to just do that.
So continuing late 2018 is they show the cover at the back. It's the Dark Phoenix Saga era. You know, Wolverine joins the Team Colossus. You know, it's a Nightcrawler, that kind of thing.
Because they're going to go into reprints, basically, at the end of this.
Yes.
Well, and he's doing a cool thing with the covers where all these covers are going to line up.
Neat.
So he's like starts off with Cyclops in the original X-Men uniform, and then the uniform he's wearing in this issue, and then this issue is Iceman, and like each half of the cover is like a different era of the team, and so they're all going to line up into a cohesive kind of timeline. I think that's going to look really cool when it's done.
So X-Men Grand Design ratings. I'm giving it a 4.5.
Same, 4.5.
I'm giving it a solid 4 just because I liked it a little less than I liked the previous issue. But, yeah. Strong 4.
I give issue 1 a 5.
Okay. Sticking with it?
Sticking with it, yes. I'll be here for the next issue later here. Assuming I'm not dead.
That one came along from the patrons, and of course, every week we thank a few of the people who have supported us at patreon.com/ifanboy by giving them dumb superpowers if they have, in fact, contributed at a high enough level. So first up is Tilly Larez. Tilly has the power to know what people really want. So if somebody's complaining to her about something, like, she can immediately tell what it is that they actually want and are complaining about and can take care of that instead of dealing with all that passive aggression.
Deleting my power now. I had a power that just said can read between the lines, and so I'm just going to go ahead and delete that now.
Sorry about that.
You've covered it. You did it. Well, I mean, it's good that we both had the idea. It means there's something there. There's it's a there true. There.
Yeah. I was thinking of
Josh,
it from a customer service standpoint.
Was there a lot of complaining this break?
Yeah, but that wouldn't have helped in my particular case.
Okay.
I was thinking of it in terms, although, you know, I manage a sales team, so it would be helpful.
Angus Guthrie, thanks for being a patron. Angus never needs a coat. He doesn't need a jacket.
What if he wants to wear one?
I mean, he can. He doesn't need it, though.
Okay, that's fair enough.
He's not going to be sweating.
You were just on the East Coast.
Here's the thing.
Uh-huh.
Say, let's just make up a scenario. Let's say you started off in the morning, it was -5 degrees.
Okay, that's going to happen.
You got in like a flying cylinder, and you landed, and it was 70 degrees.
Okay.
Suddenly, you were way too overdressed.
Mm-hmm.
Angus wouldn't have that problem. He just doesn't need the coat in the first place. He can wear he wants to wear a stylish, you know, coat to look nice. Sure, absolutely. He just doesn't need it to maintain to body temperature.
Okay.
I think I'd rather have the opposite power. I'd rather be able to wear a coat without any of the thermal effects because I want more pockets.
Well, no, that's the point. Is he doesn't need it. It doesn't change his body temperature. He's always regulated, so he can wear the coat, but it doesn't make change affect his
Ryan,
warmer
web belts. That's all you need. Just a bunch of web belts.
Think about getting a bandolier.
Yeah, there you go.
Across the chest. Yeah, Chewy style.
Yeah, that's the way to go. You could do that in any of the tropics. It fits right in.
If I decide to join up with the gorillas.
Yeah.
Eric Wallstrom, I've been rewatching The West Wing. And so Eric Wallstrom, once every 24 hours, can say, may I have the room? And it happens. He gets the room.
Just once every 24 hours.
Once it has a recharge period, so once every 24 hours, he can be standing in a crowded room. Whoever he wants to talk to into that room, he can just say, may I have the room? Everyone else has to leave.
I feel like you can do that if you're just kind of polite. You know,
but I feel like in The West Wing, it's an authority thing where the president gets to say, may I have the room? And everybody just pieces out.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets that no matter the social. He could do it in the Oval Office and the president would leave.
Okay.
So it's like a psychic convincing power, but it only works once every 24 hours, and it's under a very specific circumstance.
Okay.
Fair enough. Good one.
I don't have to call enough meetings that I would have to use that. Like 20.
But wouldn't you love it?
I could see myself getting drunk with power.
Think about your daily life and how occasionally you just want some silence.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, because you could do it just to be alone in the room, but only once every 24 hours. You couldn't get too drunk off the power, I don't think.
How long before they could come back?
That I didn't
because I can send my kids out of the room, but they'll be back in minutes.
Yeah. I guess you have to send them out of the room with some task or conversation in mind, and then once that's over, then the spell has worn off.
All right,
Josh, what you got to do is create your own really long PowerPoint, and then send them out of the room and just go through it like a meditative thing.
That's how he rereads Watchmen. He just.
Can I just tell you how successful I have been in the tech industry middle management, and I still don't know how to create a PowerPoint deck? I have no idea how to do it, and I don't know why. I don't know how I still have a job.
Let's move on. You're failing up. Keep going.
Chad Anderson. I instantly knows how to do everything in Microsoft Office.
So he can create a PowerPoint.
Every submenu, every little formula or tiny diversion, all of those things that you think, what is all this stuff on Microsoft Word that I've never used? Chad knows all of it.
You said Office, not just Word.
Yeah. But I said Office. So I'm talking about Excel. I'm talking about Office. I'm talking about PowerPoint.
But like if he needs to manage a database, he can go into Microsoft Access and he's got it.
Okay. I don't know myself. I don't have this power, but Chad can take care of it. Like, Chad creates the most amazing spreadsheets.
I mean, every spreadsheet is amazing, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, from a certain point of view.
My own theory is that the average person knows how to do 10 things in Microsoft Office.
But we all have it on our resumes.
Yeah. It's like, the same 10 things.
The most pointless resume listing ever.
Microsoft Office. I can use a computer.
Proficient on PC and Mac. I can turn them both on.
Man, I know some people aren't, though. I know some people for whom that is a lie.
Like everybody's mom.
Yeah, Control V instead of Command V, they're lost. Not a clue.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That is where you can go join up at a certain level. I think it's a $5 level. You can get your own superpower. You can also vote on the books. And thank you, everyone who does that every week.
Yeah, so get over there to patreon.com/iFanboy. And here's the thing. You remember that billing thing that we all talked about? Everyone was mad about? It's over. It's gone. They got rid of it. So if you were listening and you're like, screw this, I'm not going to support anything, and we're not going to hold that against you, but they changed it back.
Well, in fact, they never actually instituted the new thing.
Yeah. As you
while we were gone, they didn't, I don't want to say backtrack, but they saw the outcry, they changed their plan. So they never actually changed how they're going to bill patrons. So
like that time that Netflix was going to change the name of their DVD service to, I forget what it was called.
Like, it was like Flix. Something like that.
Something. Stupid. It was something stupid, but it didn't last long. So get over to patreon.com/iFanboy if you want to support the show. Or you could also go over to ifanboy.threadless.com where you will find 6 designs now. If you were a shrewd listener, previously that number was 5. There's 2 classic. There's the iFanboy and the Herm shirt. And there are 4 new era designs. There's the Pick of the Week podcast. There's ratings.
Ratings.
There's, of course, our shirt, If One is Electro, which is wonderful. And of course, now you will go and you will find the GDAT shirt.
And that is something that the patrons might be more familiar with, but I think careful listeners of the show will know what the GDAT stands for.
And yeah, who the GDAT may or may not
so
be.
So check that out.
Yes, it's definitely worth it. And of course, you can just go over to ifanboy.com/support and you can find direct donation via PayPal if you don't want to deal with any of that stuff. And you know, here in the new year, I'm not sure how the new tax bills affect this, but the billionaires, I feel like this is a billionaire's world and you'll probably have even extra money.
True.
To just send our way, and I think we're going to need it, is my guess. if you want to send that via the PayPal link at ifanboy.com/support. Let's just do one of these because we're running very long.
You're the keeper of the clock, so you tell me.
I am. Patrick K. of North Carolina says, I've been wondering about this since Pick of the Week number 32, when Ron said he was the bitchy one. Which character from the Golden Girls would each of you be? Feel free to include Ron, Paul, or any other iFanboy team member you might like.
And hello.
I'm more curious to see if this is actually a thing that we're able to do.
I saw you pick this, and I was like, oh, because I know.
Josh, I specifically asked if there were any questions I needed to prepare for.
It's not fun if you prepare for it.
That's not how the audience question segment works, Ryan.
No, it isn't. Just you're asking me if you need to prepare for something is a version of me having to prepare for something. And that's not going to happen.
I have definitely watched The Golden Girls. I it's probably been 25 years.
Can anyone name the Golden Girls spinoff series?
Silver Girls.
I believe that Empty Nest was a Golden Girls
spin-off. Oh, right. I watched Empty Nest.
As did I. I don't know why. There was literally no reason for a 12-year-old Josh channels. To watch that. Yeah, that's... And, it's a good point.
I loved Empty Nest. Who was the star of that? That was Richard Mulligan.
Richard Mulligan.
With the hangdog face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was great. Anyway, I probably haven't watched Golden Girls, which aired from 1985 to 1992, since 1992. So,
wait, who did Ron mean when he said he was the bitchy one? I don't even know that.
I think he was just describing himself as the
bitchy one. He was just saying of the group.
Oh, okay. I thought he meant...
Depends on how you want to go about bitchy, but it's still true,
so
I think.
Do we know the characters?
Well, there's...
I mean,
there's,
it looks them up.
There's 4. You've got Dorothy, I believe, right. Who is played by Maude.
B. Arthur.
From Star Wars, the holiday special.
Betty White, the flighty one.
Rose, the flighty one.
Rose. Rue McClanahan, the elderly sexy one.
Blanche
Dubois. See, it's coming back.
Devereaux. Blanche Devereaux.
From Streetcar Named Desire.
I see what they were referencing there now. Because I didn't know that at the time, but I do now. Okay, and Estelle Getty, whose name was...
Sophia,
there you go. Who is...
She was from Cecilia.
It was Martin Scorsese's mother, I think.
So
more or less.
I think for a time I was Blanche, but I'm rolling right in Sophia.
explain that last part.
Do I pick up your Blanche torch then?
You can
ask your wife.
That's your call.
Yeah,
that's you and your wife. That's the last person I would want to ask about that.
Well, I mean, the stereotype would be, I think I would be Dorothy. Well, I don't think there's an analog here.
I don't know that there is.
We don't
This isn't the Ninja Turtles. These aren't archetypes.
Yeah.
I think there are archetypes, and I think we don't understand them.
You know what it is?
No.
The brilliance of the Golden Girls is that we are all the Golden Girls.
Oh, my God.
We are all of them.
And we really were Golden Girls.
I think this is the one instance where I was like, I think I'm going to have to say I'm B. Arthur. But it turns out that I don't.
I think we're all a little B. Arthur. We're all a little Betty White.
I don't think I'm a lot of Betty White. Really, think about that.
Yeah, she's fun.
She's fun. There's one. She's charming. People like her. She's going to live a long time.
She had the family. She had the wife.
That's a good point. Happily married.
All right. That's one way to look at it.
So,
whereas Connor, as now Sophia, fled an arranged marriage to Guido Spirelli. I can't believe that's the name of a character.
I really like how that was the last vestige of sitcoms that really didn't worry about being ethnically offensive. They were just like, what's the most really basic ethnic stereotype we can put in this? Well, let's name him Guido. Oh, obviously we should name him Guido so that people don't
Father
get
Guido
confused.
Guido Sarducci was a cultural icon at that time.
Yeah, but he was also a Catholic priest. He was kind of funny. I had a Guido Sarducci tape at one point, and it was very funny, but not for a while. Like, I listened to it the first time, like, I don't get that. And then later I listened to it, I was like, oh, that is very funny.
Okay, so here's a couple of things. Now we're just going off into a Golden Girls tangent, but...
This is what the kids listen for.
Three spinoffs, not just Empty Nest. There was Nurses, which technically was a spinoff of Empty Nest, so it was a grandchild of...
Okay.
That's Golden, spinoffs.
There was The Golden Palace, which ran from September 92 to May 93, starring Cheech Marin and Don Cheadle.
Really?
Featured cameos by Betty White, Ruby McClanahan, and Estelle Getty in their characters.
5 years before Don Cheadle would make his star-making turn as Buck Swope in Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
I sort of met Cheech once, but I didn't quite recognize him, so kind of passed over me.
Sorry.
Huh. Anyway, we don't know. There's no good answer to it.
We should stop doing this show right now.
That's it. We're done.
Do you have better questions for 2018? We bet you do. You want to write into contact@ifanboy.com and make up for this. What's just happened? You have the power in your hands, your fingertips, and your internet.
I blame Patrick K.
I mean, obviously, it's Patrick K's fault. You know, it'll be a long time before we read one of his emails again. Or will it? I don't know, Patrick K. Ball's in your court again. contact@ifanboy.com. Connor, are there any other special editions I need to worry about?
Right before the break, we obviously released the All Media Year-End Roundup, where me and Josh and Mike Romo talked for 3 hours and like 10 minutes about movies and TV shows and books and podcasts and music and all kinds of things. And that's fun. That's on the feed. And then right behind that, or before that show, behind that show, in between this show and that show, is the Star Wars The Last Jedi podcast. I don't know if any of you listened to it. I don't know if you had strong feelings about it. We didn't hear from anybody about it. No one made any comments about it. No one had any feelings about our feelings.
Ugh.
So I'm not even sure if anyone even heard that one. Maybe it didn't even make it onto the feed.
Sure.
So the most controversial iFanboy podcast since X-Men The Last Stand. So you can find those two shows behind this one on the feed. They're fun shows. I enjoyed those shows.
It was the X-Men The Last Stand of Star Wars Talksplode podcasts. Or whatever it is.
Long-time listeners will know people really, really didn't like that we hated that movie, X-Men The Last Stand.
But history once again has shown us to be correct. We're behind the gun. I owe you guys a Talksplode. I'll be honest with you. My Talksplode guest dropped off the face of the goddamned earth. Still making comics, which I guess is the point, but I was left scrambling a little bit. So we're going to figure out what that is, and you're going to have your December Talksplode. It will happen this month.
You should do it with Ryan.
Yeah. Ryan, you did a run of X-Factor, right?
Yeah, definitely. It was like a math comic. So it was just about how to factor equations.
This is what keeps happening to me. Also, there should be a Booksplode coming up. We'll tell you what that is next week on the show. We'll figure out what that's.
Oh, wow. You gave us a deadline. Good job.
Yeah. Well, we have to read it. So there's, and we.
Hey, what about the Jack Kirby Fourth World Omnibus?
I'm not going to get through that in time.
That's like 12,000 pages.
Yep, that's definitely not a thing that's going to happen. And with all that random bolding, I can't have it. But those are two things that you're going to be able to look forward to this month. Otherwise, get over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our other podcasts, the ones from the past to slake you over. Somebody had asked about, you know, there's a lot of old Talksplodes and movie podcasts and all that stuff is all still right there for the taking.
Make Comics podcast.
Make Comics, yep. You can go over to facebook.com/ifanboy and follow at ifanboy on Twitter to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. Of course, you can follow us individually at Jay Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram and CS Kilpatrick on Instagram. And Ryan, I don't know what your handles are. I just know you're there.
Haupt on Twitter and Ryan Haupt on Instagram.
Well, there you go. That's lovely.
And finally, Twitter early.
Yes, you did.
Finally, if you like the show, write us a review or leave a star rating on iTunes. You can do either one of those. That's great. Better yet, tell your friends about the show. Introduce your mom to the podcast or your Uncle Steve. I hope that all happened over Christmas and we helped mitigate some family and arguments. Help spread the iFanboy love. And I really just can't emphasize this enough. Josh and I are basically barely holding on by a thread here. Maybe next week will be the show you thought you were going to get this week with more energy and pep and zest for life as opposed to my eyeballs hurt right now.
If I put any more emphasis into my voice, I will start coughing for 8 minutes.
Yeah. I listened randomly to the show where I had pneumonia or the shows where I had pneumonia. I'd forgotten about those. And I was like, right, I almost died a couple of years ago during around this time. And I went back and I really sound like I'm about to die. So for some reason, we just get sick in the winter. So apologies.
My reason is I have kids who bring in germs. I don't know what you're doing out there.
I have someone who has a lot of kids around them all day.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you yes. Poor bastard.
No fault of my own. I didn't even cause these kids to become into the world.
You signed the paperwork.
So... Ryan, tell people about your shows.
Very straightforward, simple. Science Sort Of is a show where me and my scientist buddies talk about science, drink some beers, hang out. We stole a lot of ideas from you guys, but just decided to make the show about science instead of about comics. And that's basically what it is.
That's fine. That's fair.
That's fine.
Thanks, Ryan, for doing the show.
That was
fun. Thanks for having me. I always appreciate it.
Ryan will be a semi-regular voice that you'll hear sometimes. And you'll hear him again soon. When is that? You know what?
It's happening. Talks are happening. I know what you're asking about. Soon. I know I've been saying soon for a while, but actually soon.
Okay. Well, we'll deal with that. We'll announce that later on.
Stealing your last part, Connor, because I'm gonna infuse this with passion.
Okay. To the listeners, I don't know what they're talking about either.
Write a review for this show, people. This is a good show. Write a review.
Don't hit him over the head.
It's important.
Keep it cool, Haupt.
The algorithm. Nobody knows how it works.
That's true. That is important. I'm going to go lay down and not get up for another 18 hours because I haven't slept since. It's been 2 days since I slept more than an hour. So there you go. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. I'm heading into another however many days with my children at home in the house.
I'm Ryan, and The Last Jedi was good. I'm out.
Oh.
Duh. Whoa.
I'm so tired. Damn tired that I'm forgetting when you were walking, holding my hand.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ifanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ifanboy.